welcome to Season 7, Episode 21 of the Ubuntu Podcast. It's Wednesday, the 20th of August, and we're going to discuss what's been happening in the news and in the Ubuntu community. If you're listening live, you can send us messages using the chat thing on the website and use the hash Ubuntu... Hash UUPCIRC channel. You can chat to us using the hash UPCIRC channel. I'm Alan. Joining me this week is a tiny bit stressed Laura, but let's talk to Mark first. Hello, Mark. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. How are you doing?
Yeah, tickety-boo. Cool. Jolly good.
I made it, just about.
Yes, there's a mild panic there where I get a text saying, oh, I'm stuck in traffic.
Yes.
I don't know if you were going, when you were texting, but it felt
you
like
to imagine it.
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Good.
And Laura.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Thank you for making that cake. That was yummy.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Yeah. We've got more, of that to come.
Oh, good. Good.
Mm. You're missing out, listeners.
Tea and cake. No Tony this week, but he'll be back soon. And I suppose we better just get on with it, really.
Yeah, we'll give it a go.
See what happens.
So details of an HP laptop have been revealed by Mobile Geeks in Germany, with the modest specs including fixed 2 GB of RAM, a gig of AMD CPU, and 14-inch 1366x768 display. It's been dubbed by some as the Chromebook killer, and it ships with Windows 8.1.
Huh? Yeah.
Why are we talking about this?
Because it's cheap. And you know how we were talking previously about Chromebooks and how they're super cheap machines and, you know, for a couple of hundred dollars you can get something that runs Chrome. Mm-hmm. Well, okay, this is a couple of hundred dollars and runs Windows. So, you know, it's also proprietary and horrible.
Yeah.
But, you know, you could potentially wipe it and run something else on there.
Hmm.
With, yeah, it's got 2 GB of RAM, which is not huge, and it's not replaceable. You can't upgrade it.
Okay.
Which is a bit of a shame.
Yeah.
But you could probably run a lightweight distro on there.
Yeah.
And it's got either 32 or 64 gig of SSD, which is plenty for a little, like, you know, small laptop for a bit of web stuff, mm-hmm. if you don't want to tie yourself to Chrome.
Cool. So, I mean... In terms of running Ubuntu on it, would it run a full-fledged Ubuntu with Unity?
It probably would. I mean, it's a 1 gigahertz AMD CPU that will scale up to 1.6. So it's not the fastest thing in the world. It might be a bit sluggish. So you're probably not going to be running, you know, super powerful games.
But for something which you perhaps, you know, might want to take...
As a conference,
onto a conference or something like that, something lightweight to just throw in a bag and not worry too much about because it's not that expensive.
Exactly.
While you've got your, you know, powerhouse machine at home.
Yeah, or if you're traveling and you don't want to worry about taking your super expensive machine with all your company secrets on, you could take it blank and then install it when you arrive. Download a USB, just like take a USB stick with you know, your favorite Linux distro. Take this cheap laptop with you, blank.
Yeah,
and then if you get stopped at the customs, I know some people are a bit worried about these kinds of things. Get stopped at the gate, you can turn it on and show it's got no operating system found. And then you know, when you arrive, install, do your stuff, and then when you finish, wipe it and bring it home again.
Paranoid computing with Alan Pope.
Yeah, but isn't that likely to get you arrested for carrying a laptop that's not really a laptop?
Wait, what? You could get arrested for having a laptop blank.
Well, it doesn't show that it's boots.
It boots. It boots.
Yeah.
You know, the BIOS. You can boot to the BIOS. Go, look, it works fine. I'm not sure how thorough their tests are at the gate, to be fair. But, yeah, I
let's try it and find out.
Yes. Yes, if any of our listeners would like to try that. And let us know how you get on from Guantanamo Bay. Mark.
OpenStreetMap is 10. They are celebrating their 10th birthday this month. They've got over 1 million registered members contributing.
1 million?
1.7 million registered users contributing to the worldwide open source map. sorry, with... I should read this all in one go, shouldn't I?
That's what it's there for.
1.7 million registered members, and 3,000 of them are editing the map daily.
Which is pretty impressive.
It is pretty impressive. I remember seeing at the last Lug Radio Live a talk about OpenStreetMap where they had an animation of the globe with like all of the updates to the data being shown up, and you had like some countries... It was just like very slowly and organically growing, and then you'd get like a country where the government had opened up the data and there's just this whole thing lights up. It's really cool.
Yeah, we interviewed a couple of the guys from OpenStreetMap actually at that Lug Radio. I remember sitting in a little room with lots of noise in the background, as is our usual way for doing interviews.
Not a toilet.
And I remember them saying that they were on course to map the whole of the UK by the end of the year. Whatever year that was, six, seven years ago, whenever that was. Yeah, it must have been 7 years ago before we started.
Before our camp started. It's not that long.
Yeah. There's a couple of nice videos celebrating this 10 years. One of them has got a similar kind of animation.
Yeah.
And it starts off in the UK and shows the little lines highlighting where, you know, bits are done. And like you say, it zooms out and then whole countries just blam appear and it rotates around and you can see little islands appearing in the sea. And so it's really quite impressive work.
I think I first heard of OpenStreetMap at Lug Radio Live, one of the previous ones. Because they had a bunch of the guys there with GPS trackers and joined the mapping walk around Wolverhampton.
They wanted to improve Wolverhampton.
So Wolverhampton's like one of the most mapped cities in the UK, I think.
Brilliant. Awesome. In European legislation news, Google have removed 12 BBC News links from their index in the ongoing Right to be Forgotten saga. Thankfully, Auntie Beeb has linked them all on a new article which hasn't been removed.
Oh, the Streisand effect.
Yay, BBC.
Yes, it's brilliant, isn't it? Yes, the articles cover a range of topics, and you know, we've mentioned a couple of them before, but now.
Right. So is it generally like stuff which is pertaining to specific people?
Yeah, about, you know. Transgressions people have had in high office, for example.
But like one of them was, I think it said a defendant where his own solicitor called him an idiot. And, you know, it's just, I can kind of see why people might not want to be remembered, but if they were legitimate trials, especially if
it's a matter of public record.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, it's like going back and cutting out parts of the newspapers from the past, or you know, editing them and like reprinting them.
1984 all over again.
It is.
I've seen some books in the University of Salamanca library which were censored by the Spanish Inquisition, and they do literally have bits cut out of them and pages just sort of scribbled all over.
Wow.
Yeah, because they talk about, you know, gravity and the Earth not being the centre of the universe.
Frightening that, you know, we look back at that and think, aren't they crazy? And now we're doing pretty much exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
Ridiculous. Laura.
So Munich had to a big song and dance. They switched to Linux as their desktop operating system.
Yes, big project that was.
City Council or something?
Yes.
Now they're rumoured to be moving back to Windows. If their recommendations go that way.
Yeah, it's funny. This story has been around all the Linux press, but it seems that it's just one guy in Munich, the deputy mayor, who's saying we should switch back to Windows, and he's a self-proclaimed Windows fanboy.
Yeah. And he likes having Outlook.
Oh, bless. I'm sure they could throw a VM up for him.
How can somebody like having Outlook?
Well, you know...
No, I don't. Well, I've got Outlook. It's horrible.
What's the alternative? If you say Gmail, what's the alternative that's not Outlook?
Well, I met someone the other day who said that she actually, now she's using Outlook for her work, she actually misses Lotus Notes.
Wow. She should seek help.
Yeah. Well, I can't comment on that, but...
So, yeah, I think we need to keep an eye on this story because it seems to be... it's doing the rounds. And, you know, there's not a lot of real facts to back this up other than one guy saying he likes Windows.
And the head of IT didn't seem to know anything about it being a problem.
Right.
I think some others said they thought it was a bit expensive because they had to do custom programming and stuff and they had increased numbers of help tickets. But the IT guy said, well, we'd expect increased numbers of help tickets. So.
Right. Keep an eye on that one.
Robert O'Callaghan, who describes himself as Christian, repatriate, Kiwi, and Mozilla hacker, has blogged about people moving from Firefox to Chrome, warning them that if they don't support Firefox now, they'll miss it later.
Right. Well, so this is, you shouldn't turn away from us because,
well,
when we disappear,
who's going to be the open web?
Right.
You're going to have Chrome and Blink as the one true browser with people developing specifically for that browser. And if you want to develop something else, then it's going to be like, you know, IE 5 and 6 all over again.
So Chrome is the new Internet Explorer.
Use it or lose it.
Yeah.
You said it, not me.
I can kind of sympathize when you become, you know, they've gone from a position of some superiority in the open source world.
Yeah.
And they had a lot of mind share in terms of Firefox. And Chrome came along, and just like we mentioned last time,
yeah,
Chrome have come along and eaten the Linux desktop lunch,
yeah,
with their Chromebooks, and now they're eating Mozilla's browser lunch.
Yep.
It's very sad. I can see why they say this. And
yeah. Well, I have carried on using Firefox all this time for pretty much this reason, because, you know, I know that Mozilla's goals behind having a browser are much more in tune with my sort of views and what I want to see in the web than Google's.
Right. Yeah, I can understand that. But why are people switching to Chrome? What's the thing, other than the fact that you get a pop-up in when you go to google.com,
yeah,
that says you should use Chrome, you know, and click this button and they make it very easy for you to switch away from Internet Explorer or indeed Firefox to Chrome.
Yeah.
What's the driving reason why people go to Chrome?
I was just about to say, having things like your Google account, which can then sync with Chrome on your
mobile
mobile device, but then, right, Firefox can do that. Yeah. Just as well.
Chrome ships by default on mobile devices,
and its default sort of configuration is that it prompts you to log in and use your Google account while you're browsing so that it can do, right, all this, whereas in Firefox you've got to do that as a setup step.
Yeah, and I've never yet done it on Mozilla, whereas I've done it on...
Yeah, I didn't, yeah, even know you could do it on Firefox.
It's in the you know, edit preferences under one of the tabs.
Right.
Right where you'd expect.
Not in a thing that smacks me in the face as soon as I open Firefox.
No.
Right. Now that's where you're going wrong, you see. Someone should fix that. In other news, Linux Weekly News writer Jonathan Corbett has gently vented about his recent frustration with GNOME Shell, which triggered responses from a number of prominent Linux and GNOME developers.
Ooh.
So he posted this on Google Plus. I think it was just before he was traveling, or as he was traveling to an event, a Linux hacker event that he was going to cover. And I think he was in the middle of typing, you know, probably a presentation or something, and got smacked in the face with a GNOME dialogue that basically said, you need to log out now. And he didn't get an opportunity to save his work, which is apparently what happens when GNOME Settings Daemon crashes. GNOME Settings Daemon, when that dies, that can be a horrible... I mean, the worst I've ever seen is just the UI turns into, I don't know, Windows 3.11, because all the decorations go away.
Yeah.
I've never experienced this kind of problem that he's had, but he got a number of comments on Google Plus from people saying, I've seen that, and you know, this is frustrating, and it was telling that there were some responses from members of the GNOME development community saying, look, we know that's a problem, yeah, you're right, that needs fixing, and then further discussions about how much usability testing have been done on GNOME, and it seems not an awful lot recently.
Right.
There was some, you know, back in the day. It seems not a lot recently.
When you say back in the day, do you mean back in the GNOME 2 day, or do you mean
when they were
designing GNOME 3?
Well, I think, a long time ago.
Right.
Yeah, in the sun days. Yeah. So, it was an interesting thread. I mean, you know, it's yet another example of just one guy who has a problem. But it's interesting that all these, you know, fairly prominent people pop up and say, yep, you know, that is rubbish and that should be fixed.
So. Just a note back to our Google Chrome discussion just now. I've just noticed an alert at the top of my Google Doc I'm looking at that says, you're using a version of Firefox which is unsupported. Some features may not work correctly. Please update your browser or try Google Chrome.
Yeah. Some of...
Nice.
Someone filed a bug today, I think, in Launchpad about the Ubuntu version of Firefox, which is what you're running there.
Ah, yeah.
So, yes. that's another reason why people run Chrome. Yes, moving on.
How-To Geek are running an article suggesting the Windows Phone Store may not be full of carefully curated high-quality software. In a piece titled, "The Windows Store is a cesspool of scams, why doesn't Microsoft care?"
Nice.
They pull no punches in detailing what developers are submitting to the Windows Phone Store.
Mm. Hmm. I kind of feel their pain to some degree. But, you know, on a much smaller scale.
Are you saying that the Ubuntu Phone Store is a cesspool full of scams?
I'm absolutely not saying that. No.
I wonder if there's actually some targeting of Windows users for these scams in particular, or if it's just that Microsoft are a bit less strict than
Well, they
other
curate
people.
Them. They're curated by humans.
Oh.
And as I understand it, but they seem to have very low standards because, you know, in the article they show like 20 different copies of VLC, some of which aren't even VLC. They're just, you buy it and it's a link to tell you how to download VLC, you know, in like those eBay scams, which are, you how to get an Xbox, which is like not an Xbox, it's telling you how to.
Go to the shop and buy an Xbox.
That fools, you know, naive people.
I know someone who once got a hard disk from eBay. Literally got a physical hard piece of, I don't know, stone or something in a circular shape in an envelope.
Wow. So there are people out there like that. So, yes, it's an interesting article, and I'm hoping we don't fall into that same trap.
And finally, in the news this week, Steve Ballmer has stepped down from the Microsoft board.
Jolly good.
And now it's time for some community news. And our first community news is actually more of a community event. The Ubuntu Global Jam is happening on Friday, the 12th of September, 2014. Maybe we should have a chat with someone about that next week.
I'd finish reading that first.
Oh, sorry. It's more than one day.
Yes.
Sorry, I'm not very good at this today. Friday the 12th of September 2014 to Sunday the 14th of September 2014.
That's right. It's a 3-day event.
Cool. And it starts at 5 on the Friday and ends at 5 p.m. UTC on the Friday and ends.
Have you
at
been drinking?
I hope not.
22 UTC on the Sunday. So does it go straight through, no breaks in between?
Well, you know what, you're right, we should talk to someone about this and find out those details. So yeah, we'll do that in the next episode. In another news, once again, the lovely people at Prentice Hall are giving away copies of the official Ubuntu book, which is penned by community members Matthew Helmke, Liz Joseph, Jose Antonio Ray, Philip Bellew, and Benjamin Mako Hill. I think it's the 8th edition of this book. It's a great book. Big purpley coloured book, easy to spot in bookstores. But the publishers are giving away copies to official loco teams. George Castro's written a blog post about it. Tells you, if you're a representative of an Ubuntu loco team, how to go about ordering these official books. It's nice. It's a good book.
Cool. Do you think they'll send us some we could give away?
That's an excellent question. Mm. We should do that. We should ask them if they'll send us some books, and then we'll have a competition and then not post them.
Yes. We'll put you in charge of that then.
No, I was thinking maybe actually what we do is get them to post them direct, maybe. That might be easier. Yeah, well, let's have a word with
them.
They're
probably quite heavy, aren't they?
Yeah, let's have a chat to them about that. That's a good idea.
So the dates for the next Ubuntu Online Summit, UDS as was, but not in person anymore, have been announced as the 12th to the 14th of November, which is Wednesday to Friday. No.
Yes.
Yes. From Wednesday to Friday, there'll be planning, discussion and feedback in tracks called App Development, Cloud Ops, Community, Ubuntu Development and Users. There's plenty of time to start adding sessions to the schedule, but don't leave it too late.
Yes, it fills up quite quickly. At the last minute, it looks really empty, like now and for a while beforehand, because nobody's focused on it. And then at the last minute, suddenly the schedule fills up and we have to create extra rooms and make, you know, I say rooms, but it's a virtual, you know, done over Hangouts and IRC and all that kind of stuff. So creating an extra room is not actually a huge amount of work. It's a, you know, it's a line in a database somewhere, I'm sure. But it's kind of the merging of UDS and Ubuntu Open Week, I think, kind of put together, and you get Ubuntu Online Summit and loads of discussions happen, lots of planning. I think there's going to be a lot of talk in this one specifically about the desktop, because we've been focused on the phone over the last few months.
Uh-huh.
There'll be a lot of talk about the desktop.
Cool.
And what happens with Unity 8 on the desktop and the roadmap towards LTS in 1604. And so if you have any input to any of those kind of subjects, be worth scheduling sessions if you have any, or joining in, because it's all done by Hangouts, and you can jump on a Hangout and join in. It's really cool.
Excellent.
Do we have any events?
We have an event, of course. OggCamp.
Is only one event.
There is only one event worth talking about. It's OggCamp, a free culture on conference on the 4th and 5th of October at the Oxford Hotel in Oxford.
Hey, I booked my room.
Oh, excellent. Yes. Where are you staying?
The travel thing. Travel tavern.
Linton Travel
Linton
Tavern.
Linton Travel Tavern.
Just off the roundabout.
Yes.
Excellent. So you can find out more and get your tickets at ogcamp.org. Just to mention our kind sponsors, Ubuntu, supported by Canonical.
Yay.
Linux Voice.
Yay.
And the OggCamp community, which is now a gold sponsor.
Wow.
Yes.
And so how has it become a gold sponsor? How does that work?
It basically means that the cumulative amount of donations for tickets have now passed the magic threshold.
Oh, right. So they're free tickets, but if you want to, you can pay what you want.
Yes, you can pay what you
want. And people have optionally chosen to pay enough to get them the community gold sponsorship.
Yeah, and it's over the past few weeks, there's been a real surge in donations. Lots of people and quite big donations in some cases. So it's really amazing to see people giving it so much support, because this year we are on a much tighter budget than we were last year. Yeah. So it really, really makes a difference this year.
Wow. So speaking of budget, are we all still on the hunt for any sponsors?
Yes, we could still do with a couple more sponsors, and we do have someone on the case doing a sponsorship drive for us from the community. And that's Hannah from Team Merch. You may remember from previous years. But if there is anyone listening who would like to sponsor OggCamp and peddle your wares to 300 enthusiastic geeks and get plugs on this show, then,
and Linux Outlaws.
And Linux Outlaws, then do get in touch. The details are on the website.
The Ubuntu podcast needs you. Yes, you. If you hear something that entertains, engages, or enrages you, tweet at UUPC or email podcast@ubuntu-uk.org. You can also talk to us on the telephone, Skype, Facebook, and Google+. Find links to all these places on our website, podcast.ubuntu-uk.org. Please do get in touch. I mean it. Just one message. Just to know there's someone out there who cares.
I do love the way he says telephone. That's it for episode 21. We'll be back next week when we'll be talking to Daniel Holbach from the Ubuntu community team about the Ubuntu Global Jam. We organized that quickly, didn't we? If you're listening live, then just stay tuned and you'll hear the next show. Otherwise, see you next time.
Yep. Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.